So I invite immediately all the speakers of today that are still present to come here for some questions for from the public. Well, we have examined today the various possibilities, and above all, the voice of the private sector. We don't have very much time, but just to introduce the subject. As I said in my presentation, the aviation sector has shown that 50 years ago, all airlines were public owned. Now they are all private owned, especially in the Western countries. Do you believe that also space will see this kind of evolution in the future, in a reasonable future, let's say 10, 20 years? Who is going to answer this question?
I'm not sure that you can extrapolate to say that because airlines have become passenger airlines have become private, that the air has become private. I mean, we have scientific and we have military uses of the air that will continue, and humanitarian uses in the air that will continue, and especially under a drone regime. One of the interesting things is all of the geospatial data, one of the most important segments for a planet commercially is providing contextual information to drone operators with the assumption that they're going to be creating this new airspace that's going to be licensed from government and I think controlled in some of the same ways that space is controlled. So I would say my own personal sense is no, I think it's going to be very mixed, and it's going to, you know, in the U.S., it's been overregulated to the point where much of the drone work, for instance, hasn't happened in the U.S. It's happened, thankfully, in environments where there's a more direct consequential humanitarian benefit. So I think it's going to be mixed, but I'd love to hear what everyone else thinks.
Anyway, investment in drones is much lower in respect of aircraft. is anybody from the public that want to raise some questions to our speakers?
I have two questions. My name is Serge Plata from SP. A question to Jean-François Bureau regarding reconciliation between the cost of the structures and the revenues of the downstream services. Is part of the answer be the LEO constellations for telecoms? And the other question is addressed to the last speaker. In the future, are you contemplating improving the resolution of the DOFs?
Eutelsat has not yet looked at, we have looked, but we have made no decision regarding LEO constellations. We are a bit conservative from that point of view. However, what we see is that there is a huge investment in LEO solutions. The question of latency, as Christine was mentioning, could be a differentiator for certain applications. And so we believe that the trend to have new developments from LEO from LEO constellations will probably take place. How many of them will survive after a period of time? I don't know, and I believe nobody knows. However, it makes sense to try it. And regarding the other part of the question, which is where are the rooms for future developments? Of course, we still believe, and we are absolutely convinced that there are new developments possible from the geo orbit with new technologies, the very high throughput satellites we are working about. In order to provide 5G capacities for the mobility, for example, we are absolutely sure that in the next years, not in 10 years, but beginning of the next decade, the connected cars will include a satellite component necessarily. And the question we have in front of us is how we shall manage both navigation applications like Galileo, for example, for the cars, and other services, telecommunication services, data services, video services, and so on. So there is room for expansion for the geo solutions again, but for sure the Leo is providing a difference and could be also a part of the answer. We are very much agnostic about it. Question is about where to put the money.
Thank you. Any other questions? There are a short question. Sorry.
I think you had one other question. Just very quickly, you asked about whether Planet would increase the spatial resolution of the Dove constellation. And I guess what I would say to you is the answer is a little complicated. First, let me just back up and say some commercial or set of commercial and governmental actors, there's no question in our mind, will bring the world to 1 meter daily resolution of the planet. That's gonna happen. We have 100% confidence of that. The question of whether Planet does it or not is actually balanced by a whole bunch of other forces, because there's other things for us to do in other spectral bands, there's other things for us to do in other mission parameters, and other forms of value. When I said mission one was to image the whole Earth every day, I didn't mean it in the, like, our first mission, like our highest mission. I mean literally our first mission. There will be a second mission, a third mission. And because we can be very agile and we have a kind of a cultural and operational advantage, in some sense we're testing lots of things and letting the market speak about what will be the next kind of platform play. The last thing I will tell you, though, is that if you can put a large constellation of satellites around a planet to image it on a regular basis, you could also put a constellation of satellites around other planets to image them on a regular basis. There are all kinds of things we could do, you know, beyond Earth. So, as you might imagine, Planet's not an imagination-delimited organization. So we have a crisis of opportunity and many places to go. So we're working it out.
Thank you.
Works? Okay. I'm Nunzia Paradiso from the Italian Space Agency. I have two questions, one for Edward Anderson and the other for Dara Dutz. For Edward Anderson, I perceived from your presentation that there is a desire or a hope to contrast the monopoly that Google has on some space applications or in some fields. Is that your personal desire, hope, or there is in the World Bank group some direction on that? And the other question for Dara Dutz, curiosity, maybe I missed that information, is Field Ready that builds the machines, the 3D modeling machines, or somebody provide you with those machines?
Can I just ask you to clarify? There's a perception that there's a monopoly on, did you say Google? Or
yeah.
Search? Or
Google Company.
No, okay, maybe I misspoke. When I talk about embracing open architectures and open standards, it's to make data easily discoverable. You know, someone mentioned a one-stop shop for all Earth observation products. I believe that people should find it where they normally look. And if people, you saw, 2 billion Google searches a day, 2.6 billion? If they're searching on Google, they should find it on Google. So the World Bank collects development indicators, and if you search Google now for GDP Kenya, the first result you get is a graph from the World Bank with other similar countries over time of GDP Kenya. So we just make it easy to be indexed by search engines. We're agnostic to the technology and the companies, so we'd like it to be on Yahoo and DuckDuckGo and Baidu. That's fine. There is a concern that sometimes when you release a lot of data, if you don't think about the equity and the opportunity principles, then those established players that have the capability to take advantage of it will use it to concentrate their market dominance. So there are, that's what I meant by digital safeguards, if you like, that we need to consider what are the analogs that you put in place before you come and just map the entire country and release that data. So with Zanzibar, we plan to release very rich drone data openly, but we also have to think through, you know, is this just the big hotels and the oil companies, or are we building capacity for the university students, the seaweed farmers, the local governments to use it? But if Google picks it up, that's great, because 2.6 billion searches a day, it should be easy to find.
I had the question about if we build the machines. We actually had thought about building our machines because we knew the robustness that we needed for the machines, and none of them out there are quite up to snuff. If anyone's actually used a 3D printer, they work on occasion. But when they do work, it's amazing, particularly in the field. So with Moore's Law and everything getting cheaper exponentially and better and stronger, we figured that within the next year or so, we'll have machines that we can use. Actually, I'm talking to Made in Space because it's the only printer I've ever been able to depend on about trying to use those in the field. And I think that would be an excellent use case.
Can I add a clarification that I think? There is an important distinction. Open data is not completely public domain. We usually require a attribution that it remain open. So you will find often like OpenStreetMap data will not appear on Google Maps because Google Maps is not a fully open platform. So there is this licensing regime that's quite nuanced, and a lot of people who are not familiar with it trip up over it. Licensing geospatial data can be more complicated than you expect.
Other questions?
Okay, two interventions. One is a comment. My name is Peter Zahn from Spatial Services. To Mr. Anderson, to the Tanzania case. One comment is that, yes, the Copernicus data are free and open. They can be accessed by everyone. And if you talk about access in Africa, you should talk to Mr. Mahamo Otraogo here from the African Union Commission. Who will guide you through the process. The second thing is a question. I mean, we all know that OpenStreetMap is actually in many parts of the world the only reliable source of information. But just as a case in Tanzania, what are you doing as a World Bank to remind the local surveyor general, the institution which actually supplies this information, and how do you help them to actually fulfill their mandate?
Thank you. Yes, we're very excited about Sentinel data, and I will talk to our African Union colleagues. It's a bit more complicated, the geospatial regime, because you have formal and informal data. So, and Tanzania is rather fragmented. There's the Ministry of Lands, Housing, Human Settlements, with the Director for Lands and Survey. And a lot of the drone imagery, and certainly the community mapping imagery, has come through the Commission on Science and Technology. So it's under the informal data regime. We're using it under a skills rationale, primarily, to allow this work to happen. And we're working with the Ministry of Lands to what they call validate or authorize the data. It's a capacity building process, and you often uncover a lot of very nuanced incentive problems, skill problems, and physical just capacity problems. You know, Zanzibar is going to be 18 terabytes of data. The Commission for Lands is working in parallel to the State University of Zanzibar, but they can't handle 18 terabytes of data. The official projection system in Zanzibar is ARC 1960. Most local planners and surveyors cannot convert from WGS 84 to ARC 1960. So we have a very detailed transaction-intensive skill-building training module, but what makes this complicated is a lack of national special data infrastructure. So where we'd like to go, and this is a political dialogue that takes time, and we need to anchor it in larger programs. So there's an impetus for smart cities, a land information system, this 10-year program for smallholder farms that are drivers to then have that conversation with, okay, let's modernize the national base map, let's sort out the national spatial data infrastructure, and let's have clarification on the formal and informal data regimes. Because actually last year they passed the National Statistics Act that criminalizes publishing unofficial data with 5 years in prison. So this is still a murky policy environment that requires quite a bit of handholding. It's sort of two steps forward, one steps back, and there's several players that have to understand how their role is being affected. It's going from a sort of rather rent-seeking set of incentives where few people will, you know, be gatekeepers to relatively scarce data sets, to suddenly there's a wealth of data, and some people want to be value adders and other people are feeling a little threatened. So it's... you want to comment on this? Or?
I just wanted to say one thing specifically about the...
Is this on? One thing about the data ethics and compensatory mechanisms that Edward mentioned, which is that the presence of the conceptual regime that looks to ameliorate the potential detrimental outcomes of super empowering people who have capacity and relatively disadvantaging people who do not in the context of communities, that is incredibly important because it actually ends up, that standard ends up influencing what we do. So what we've been looking at releasing large chunks of data in regions around the world. Like, for instance, in California, we make all of the observations we make about California free and open under a Creative Commons license to encourage people to collaborate and to experiment and develop new services. And we want to do that in other places of the world, but we can only do it where those mechanisms are in place. Otherwise, we run the risk of making the situation worse. So we've been actually very thoughtful. And I do want to say that these public sector concepts, they directly influence the ethical standards that the private sector adopts. And it casts a very long and very important shadow over our set of considerations in a way that I think is actually good for the world. It's terrific, terrifically important.
Okay, the last question, if there is.
I am wondering, what are the kind of restrictions that you face from countries in terms of regime? Because you are freely collecting data, geospatial data, and you want to freely distribute geospatial data. Isn't there any fear of misuse of a kind of other factors coming in? And therefore, are not governments or other regimes trying to either in some way control, monitor, or restrict the kind of activity that you would be doing?
So it is a tricky dialogue. I mean, I should clarify, the World Bank, we are not buying our own drones, operating them, releasing the data. It's through the government. But to begin with, it's quite a scary proposition for the established authorities that we will release high-value data openly or that will conduct the mapping. So that's part of the reasons why the community mapping, where we started actually 5 years ago, was under a skills agenda as in combination with a municipal mapping agenda. And there's a saying in the space industry that if you do things in partnership, they don't happen any faster or any cheaper, but they happen. It's very difficult to kill a partnership, right? So a little bit similar was our tactics in this process. We're doing something a bit innovative, a bit different, of extreme empowerment factor for students. And these are future town planners. So we're really trying to buy mind shift. And so it became quite difficult for agencies that felt threatened for this to really claim a mandate to shut it down. But it was born somewhat informally through the Commission of Science and Technology research driver first. And if the data is good enough, let's use it for the town planning. And we knew, of course, the data would be good enough because we were mapping communities where the map was zero, where the official map had nothing. So it was of extreme value right away. And then we build up the layers we put together, and we do the whole municipality, the whole district, and then we start to say, okay, now how do we do the formal process with Ministry of Lands? Also for the flying, there's an interim regime in Tanzania. There's no regulation about how do you send the drone up to map. So being the World Bank, we're conscious that although there have been other drones flying, when we do something, it's seen as a precedent. It's seen as setting a standard. So we have to be very much aware of the risk regime. Damage to property, interference with other aircraft or airspace, privacy, risks that, you know, someone's going to use the data to count swimming pools in the minister's properties and write an article about this. So there's a lot of fear about this kind of thing. So we had to have a permit from the Ministry of Defense, a permit from Civil Aviation, a film permit from the Ministry of Information, and then a research permit from the Commission of Science and Technology. It's covering all bases.
Something from the
from the point of view of the of an operator, the feeling we have is that things are changing and moving quite quickly, not necessarily for the best from that point of view. And the same as we see more protectionism coming back all over the world, I can say that there is a kind of protectionism about the services provided from the space. In other words, it's not a uniform process, it's not everywhere, but there is a trend which is obvious that some countries would like to find the way to control what is coming from the space by the terrestrial installations. And if I look how we have been the first to provide a large high throughput satellite capacity over Europe with a satellite which was launched in 2011, which is called CalSat, covering 55 nations. When we launched CalSat, we were very confident that every nation which was covered would be happy to receive the services and to connect the people with this capacity. On the 55 nations, I must say only one was really resistant and reluctant from the beginning to give us the license to provide the services. But if I look at the situation today, I can say that between 5 or 6 are reconsidering their position. And we are in Europe, large Europe, yes, but we are talking about a situation where the standards should be the same and so on. So just to give an example that it's, I'm absolutely sure from the practical point of view, which is mine, that your question is coming as a very, very striking one for the next future of the satellite services. And if the space is a common good, the feeling that the territory, I am the boss in my territory in the field, is coming as well very much back today. And the feeling that space was a process of globalization has probably ended for part.
I'm going to just 10 seconds. The planet, by international agreements, governed by international agreements, is because you cannot literally move satellites around countries. You couldn't stop us from imaging. It just technically doesn't work. We're not bound by covenant not to image and not to release. So we could release. We see everything everywhere. However, just to Edward's point about these sort of compensatory examples, so we were looking at creating the world's first geospatially open country. And we got, this is a country that's in a developing context, it really urgently needs the data, and people in the executive branch of the government at the very highest levels wanted to be able to put their finger on the edit button and say, okay, but not around my plantation and not here. And all the interests turned out to be about them. It wasn't about national security. It was about, I don't want people to see what I've done with the people's wealth. And we walked away. Now, we walked away because we either accepted an ethical standard that would give people control for reasons that had to do with their agenda, that was, in this case, a corruption. There was an issue of corruption. But had we gone ahead and done it anyway, there was a good chance that within the country they would shut down other activities, not ours, but other people's, that would say, well, we don't want one of these coming from within the country. So we didn't. We also feel a duty of care over our brothers and sisters who are working in their communities, not to harm their ability to operate. So, you know, it's we're trying to be as ethical as we possibly can be, and really think through preemptively what all the potential scenarios are.
Okay, I wish to thank the speakers of this panel that have brought quite interesting and high-level contributions to the discussion of this conference. I wish to thank Jean-Jacques Tortora for having organized this very interesting conference, and all the attendees for having come here from various parts and also contributed with their questions. And finally, I wish to thank warmly the staff of SP that has made the practical organization of this conference, kept the contact with all the speakers and the moderators.